Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, we have old friend Jerry Marcinski back to talk about his most recent findings and give us an overall view of this archontic demiurgic force that manifests in the lives of many countless people around the world in the form of intrusive thoughts, manipulating behaviors, and thereby manipulating the destinies of individuals and collectively of society. I mean, that's how pervasive this intrusive force is and how it ties in with everything else that's going on in the surface world. So without any further ado, Jerry, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Good to be back again. It's like coming back home.
Thank you, Jerry. Really appreciate that. Well, tell us your perspective. We're 4 years into this pandemic. And now there's all this talk about the bird flu, what have you, and the fear mongering that goes with that. And we're seeing other things in the field that we're in, as well as manifesting in the public consciousness. For example, in order to explain away more and more instances of people seeing demonic entities hosting other people, non-human entities, explain away shape-shifting, people morphing, whether it's on TV or whether it's in an encounter with someone in public, in the real world, so to speak. They've now come up with another disorder. It's now considered a mental disorder if an individual sees demons within another person. So it seems like they're getting their bases covered in the possible eventuality or the potential eventuality of more and more people en masse seeing these beings for what they truly are. So I know that's a lot to unpack in just that, but I just would like your thoughts on all that, Jerry, because before we came on here, we talked about the bogus nature of the the psychological manuals that explain away all these disorders as a justification to medicate people. And on top of that, you have the medication on the one hand of the psychiatric tyranny we're under, and yet we have these pervasive, intrusive thoughts being inserted into our consciousnesses by these unseen non-corporeal entities. So yeah, it's a lot to unpack, Jerry, but whichever way you want to go with it, what are your thoughts?
Well, since you mentioned the DSM first, I'd like to take a look at that. That's the Psychiatry's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders. It looks fantastic. I mean, it looks like a work of scientific genius. They have you look at it, you open it up, and you go, "Wow, they put a lot of work into it." There's all these categories and subcategories and subcategories of subcategories, and it's the Bible. I mean, when I was in graduate school, that was the Bible. And then when I got up into the PhD program, oh, they had a whole entire course on it, teaching it as if these things were absolutely real. The truth is, the DSM is a complete work of fiction. Every single one of those more than 296 psychiatric disorders in the DSM-5 or later have been completely made up by a group of psychiatrists, two-thirds of which are in league with big pharma. So they vote the diagnoses in, and if they don't work, they vote them out. And I've heard it's like a tobacco barn, and the guy comes in and goes, "Hey, I got a new psychiatric diagnosis," and he reels it off, and they think about it, and they go, "Well, can we make some medicine to cover up the manifestations of this thing?" And if so, they vote it in. Their list is just increasing astronomically. Every 3 years, it increases. In 1952, the DSM-1 listed 106 psychiatric disorders. In 1980, 256. The DSM-5 now has 297, almost 300. And like you said, they're voting more of those things in. There are no blood tests. There's no lab tests. There's no x-rays. These are just classes of behavior that a group of psychiatrists have voted to be a mental disorder. There's nothing to verify it or back it up. So, and they're making tons of money. selling this DSM to schools, and it's backed by big pharma, you know. And some of the crazy disorders they have. I mean, mathematics disorder, official diagnosis in the DSM. If you don't like math, like I don't like math, you're disordered. You've got a mathematics disorder. Caffeine intoxication disorder. If you drink too much coffee, you've got a caffeine disorder. Sibling relational disorder. So you get a couple of kids fighting. All of a sudden, now it's a disorder. And sexual orientation disturbance. That's homosexuality. Now, this is how far they go. The Florence syndrome in the DSM, being overwhelmed by beauty, such as in Florence, Italy. Its symptoms are fainting and dizziness. Treatment suggested are antidepressant drugs. This is how crazy these people are getting. Paris syndrome, mostly Japanese patients visiting France for the first time who experienced depression, anxiety, feelings of persecution. You know, before the DSM came along, that would be like a cultural shock. You know, so that DSM is just made up. They need it for the insurance companies. You know, they need it to appear like they're scientists. You know, they have to have a diagnosis to submit to the insurance companies. You know, but it holds no scientific value except to break up segments of human behavior and pathologize them for their own purposes. You know, it's not for our purposes, it's for their purposes. So they can prescribe drugs, so they can, you know, administer whatever they think is psychiatric treatment and get paid by the insurance companies or the governments for it. So, you know, that's the DSM for you.
And all those payments are subsidized by, you know, the taxpayers, of course.
Oh yeah,
And
and the amount of money they're making is astronomical. The antidepressant market in the U.S. is expected to top $15.98 billion by 2023. The antipsychotic drug sales hit $14.54 billion in 2021, expected to reach $15.5 billion by 2022. These drugs cure absolutely nothing. All they do is dumb down the manifestations of the psychiatric disorder. They don't cure anything.
what we're seeing also is because the woke leftist ideology itself is a hive mind parasite. It just quickly consumed in a relatively short period of time, you know, the minds, the souls even of the people that have been indoctrinated in this. You look at the woke leftist ideologies in the universities. I mean, if they're serious about putting an end to all this tyranny, they've got to do something. Someone's got to do something about these universities and colleges, which turn out an endless amount of foaming at the mouth, raging liberals. And what's interesting is many of these liberals will admit to having mental disorders. It's almost like a badge of honor with them. Many of them will admit to, you know, emotional issues and what have you. So the system almost caters to them. It encourages and wants them to be these foaming at the mouth, unreasonable, irrational, you know, troublemakers is what they are. And what we're seeing also now is, you know, people mistake it, in my view. I think it's a misinterpretation. They say, oh, look, the left is eating its own. They're now, you know, going after these college protesters. They're going after all these, you know, liberals in a college, and they're going after these liberal professors. No, that's not how I see it. I see it as those people had a use-by date, an expiration date, and now they're being, you know, kicked to the curb. And in their wake is coming a whole raft of new censorship laws, exactly as we saw coming. Now, before we came on, we talked a bit about some of the recent findings, and you look at what the La Quinta team has come up with in the recent past. They've concluded publicly something that, you know, people in our field have known, that the treatments, so-called, that have been rolled out on the onto the public over the last few years, that the direct result of you know, this fake kind of fear-mongering health emergency, let's say, it turns out, based on their findings and the findings of other investigators, that there is a lot of microcircuitry, nanotechnology, little synthetic Hydra thingies in the ingredients. And what the La Quinta team has said is this is absolute proof. The microcircuitry and the nanotechnology in the treatments in the, as the ingredients, this is absolute proof that humanity is under alien attack. And I've been saying that for some time. And also, I don't know if you're familiar with the work that Bernard Gunther has been doing with colleagues of his in Germany. But his German colleagues, because Bernard is, you know, of German heritage and he speaks the language, his colleagues in Germany are telling him that there is a definite correlation between people having received these treatments and then coming under some kind of spiritual attack, under some kind of spiritual dominion. Because many of the people that Bernard has been in comms with in Germany, they're what we would call energetic healers. They're what we would call people that work with energy fields and are very intuitive, very psychic. And a lot of them say that these people that have received these treatments, so-called, they are now hosting attached entities, working through them. And we see across the board the rise of the Karens. We see the hordes now of unstable, emotionally fragile people. And I can't help but see a correlation. What was already happening in society with the psychiatric drugging of society, because it's very much like the old Soviet Maoist style of they use psychology as a weapon of the state. Oh, you're a dissident. Well, we're going to throw you into an institution and shoot you up full of Thorazine or something, right? Well, then you extrapolate across society the mass drugging of the population. And then on top of that, these treatments get rolled out, and there seems to be, Jerry, this supernatural overlay associated with these treatments, because we've seen videos of people spinning around, looking over their left shoulder, getting the fright of their life and keeling over dead. We've seen a
Yeah,
lot of
I've seen
those.
those several times.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
That's spooky. I mean, they're seeing something. There's something that is attacking them. They're swinging at it, they're punching at it, and then they just drop over dead. Very strange.
Yeah, what are your thoughts about the La Quinta team talking about the ingredients, the high-tech ingredients and microcircuitry ingredients being proof positive in their view and in my view that this is a manifestation of an alien attack upon humanity?
Well, I've heard several times that they can pick up, what is it, radio signals from this stuff. That's virtually proof positive. I mean, if it's transmitting some kind of signal, that's weird. And the, if you look at the overall picture of what's going on right now, there's more psychiatric drugs on this planet than there have ever been in the history of mankind. There's more psychiatrists and psychologists on this planet than in the history of mankind, and yet we're getting worse and worse and worse. There's more mental illness. It's at a epidemic level right now. Suicide here in the U.S. is the leading 11th leading cause of death in the U.S. In 2021, 48,000 Americans killed themselves, almost 50,000 last year. That's as many as died in Vietnam. And a lot of them are on these antipsychotic drugs and these antidepressant drugs. And people don't just kill themselves out of the blue. I mean, they think about it. So they're hearing a voice in their head, kill yourself, kill yourself. Things will be better. Kill yourself. Something is telling them to do that. There's a thought in their head telling them to do that. And this is 50,000 people killing themselves year after year after year after year. This isn't just one time a year. 50,000 people in 1 year, and it's increasing. An estimated 24 veterans are killing themselves every day in the U.S. 10,000 Americans are diagnosed with schizophrenia yearly. That's increasing. It's among the top 10 health problems on the planet, according to the World Health Organization. And are they looking for a solution? No. they've reduced the amount of research money into schizophrenia to a mere dribble by manipulating the statistics, and making it look like they're spending a lot of money on it, but they're really not. It's just a statistical manipulation. They do not want a cure for schizophrenia.
You've talked in the past about the bogus neurological brain chemistry model of schizophrenia. It's in direct contrast with what you've observed firsthand, and also what First Nations people, medicine men, women, elders, shamans have said from time immemorial, that in many, what we would refer to nowadays as mental disorders, emotional disorders, that there's a spiritual foundation, a spiritual basis for that. And what they meant was there is a malign spiritual influence at work that's making these people, have these troubles.
Exactly. So, the psychiatric mafia, when the antipsychotic drugs first came out, they were discovered in first in Germany, and then the French took them and synthesized them. They wouldn't let them use them in Europe because the Freudians were in control. So they brought them over to the US and they administered these phenothiazines to a psychiatric the population of a psychiatric hospital over there, okay, and here. And it calmed down, it dumbed down the entire psychiatric population. They weren't no any longer ranting and raving and beating up each other and beating up staff. So as far as psychiatry was concerned, this was a miracle drug. Now psychiatry and neurology were battling it out for dominance, and psychiatry was losing. What they were doing wasn't working. All right. So they latched on to these antipsychotic drugs, and they just made them their own. For the first 10 years they were using them, they had no idea why they worked at all. They just knew that they did work. And they were able to reduce the staff of psychiatric hospitals. People weren't getting hurt as bad. They were just dumbing these people down, turning them into semi-zombies. And that was good. It was like, okay, this is a treatment, actually does work. So they needed an explanation for why it worked, and they didn't know. So they started back in the 50s, I think, started blaming mothers. The mothers did something to cause schizophrenia to their kids. And the mothers went, wait a minute, we didn't do anything. I mean, what did we do? They couldn't find anything there. So they had to kick it upstairs to someplace that couldn't be investigated by the mass number of people. So they kicked it up and they said, oh, it's a genetic disorder. So who's going to investigate that? Psychiatrists can't investigate that. The massive population can't investigate that. The only people who could investigate something like that were a small body of geneticists, and most of them weren't interested in investigating schizophrenia and genetics. About maybe 20 years after they put that out as a reason, a small body of geneticists did investigate it and found no correlation between schizophrenia and genetics. They couldn't find a schizophrenia gene. So the psychiatrists and the psychiatric mafia and big pharma went nuts. Oh, it's a mass of genes. It's an intertanglement of genes that we'll figure it out one day, but we don't have an answer to it right now. But it's the genes. Trust us, it's the genes. They couldn't find anything. So they had to drop that because there was no hard care proof for it. So what they did is they go, well, we need something else to kick it up again to where the mass population can't see it, but we have a cause. So they came up with this biochemical imbalance theory. Now, when I first went to work at this giant psychiatric hospital after graduate school, one of the first things I noticed is that if it was a biochemical imbalance, I never ever saw a psychiatrist take a baseline for what was out of balance. They didn't ever take a blood test or X-ray or lab work or anything. There was no baseline. So how did they know what was out of balance or by how much? They didn't have any scientific baseline. I found out later that none ever existed. They were just brainwashed in the universities to believe that schizophrenia and most other mental illnesses were caused by a biochemical imbalance of the brain. They had no proof of that. Now, this was started by Eli Lilly. So it wasn't until late 1980s, after the release of the antidepressant Prozac, that the idea of a chemical imbalance hit the psychiatric mainstream. You know, as psychiatrist Peter Briggen in 1991 points out in his book Toxic Psychiatry, the drug company Eli Lilly advanced the chemical imbalance theory as a marketing scheme to sell their new drug Prozac. There was no demonstrable evidence that depressed patients had any imbalance in their brain, but Eli Lilly ran with it. They knew it was a lie at the time. They didn't care. Before long, psychiatrists and psychiatric patients alike came to believe and identify with the idea that mental disorders were caused by a chemical imbalance of the brain. There is no proof of that. You know, now, if you wonder about that, any of you that are going to a psychiatrist for the treatment of anything, if they tell you it's a chemical imbalance of their brain, ask them, what's the proof and where's the baseline? If my brain is out of balance, what's out of balance and by how much? Tell me. They won't have an answer. This is the propaganda that they're being fed in the universities and the colleges, which are taken over since 1910 by the Rockefellers, that made it illegal to teach any other kind of form of medicine than pharmacology. So naturopathy was out. The Tesla's electric ray was out. Any other kind of treatment was out. If they wanted to graduate doctors, they had to teach pharmacology. And those universities are still run by Big Pharma. They run them by the grants. They determine what's published, what's not published, who gets grants, who doesn't get grants. You try to publish something that disagrees with what Big Pharma says, and it doesn't get into any of the into any of the journals. And they're still teaching this crap today. It's still going on today. I pulled up a drug advertisement a couple of weeks ago, and it's still going, oh, it is believed that this is caused by a chemical imbalance of the brain. They don't even know what the chemical balance of the brain should be. They have no idea, let alone a chemical imbalance. They don't know what's out of balance or by how much. It's a complete fabrication. It's a lie.
Even their criteria for success is all skewered. Oh, because these psychiatric patients are now docile, right, and pretty much, you know, walking zombies, it must be working, which, you know, translated means, well, now we can reduce staff. Now our workplace is not as dangerous as it used to be, right? We can just drug these people out, and we can tell everyone and their families and ourselves that these drugs are actually working. This is complete inversion of what medicine is supposed to be all about, what healthcare is supposed to be all about. And you look at the bizarro dichotomy of what is presented as a mental disorder, Jerry. Basically, basic human feelings, actually. Happiness, sadness, gladness, all points in between. You know, now there's a psychiatric diagnosis for each and every one of them. But when they present all of this psychopathy in front of you, you have these people dressing up as female admirals in the administration, and they're calling themselves admirals, and they're involved in healthcare. You look at this White House spokeswoman who's like incomprehensible most of the time.
She's
Can't
bizarre.
understand, he can't understand a word she says, right? So what's being presented to us as normal is the opposite, is completely abnormal. And what's actually normal is being regarded as some kind of a disorder, thereby necessitating some kind of a drugging protocol. And the power that these psychologists, psychiatrists have is out of all proportion to the actual benefit society derives from their being there. Because if someone goes off these meds, they could cause a lot of problems for them, legally, financially, as far as their family life is concerned, right? And increasingly, they're drugging younger and younger patients, right?
They
So,
sure are.
but when someone is being browbeaten, some child in our example is being browbeaten by school counselors, teachers, what have you, into believing they're actually the opposite sex of what they really are, right? In this distorted, weird world, if someone complains about that, if someone goes to the school board meeting and says, what you're doing here is wrong, the curriculum you have is obscene, these books that you're having the kids read is pornographic, they're going to escort that person out. They might even put them under arrest, right? So what they've done is normalize psychopathy, and the normal range of emotions, they've responded by making up all these diagnoses out of whole cloth and using that as a pretext to drug all these people. And
And
then
look
on
at what
top
they're.
of that, you have the overlay of the spiritual dimension on top of that, of all these drugged and addled, confused people now.
And look at what they're actually doing. They are not treating the cause of any of these psychiatric diagnoses. They're just treating the symptoms. That's both psychology and psychiatry. They're not getting at the cause, the feelings, the emotional content. They're just treating. And so if you're not getting at the cause, you're not going to cure anything. And nothing is being cured. And it's interesting to take a look at the psychiatric mafia who is actually doing this. Our educational system is pushing out thousands of psychiatrists every year that graduate with fancy diplomas. Now, you might say that the suicide rate of a subpopulation is says something about their stability. They have a high suicide rate. There's something off there. All right. So the National Mental Health Institute estimated that 4.9% of people with schizophrenia died by suicide. Their suicide rate is 5 to 10 times that of the general population. We know they're not stable. Now let's take a look at the high priests of psychiatry who run our mental health systems compared to those who are pronounced seriously mentally ill. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, the suicide rate for psychiatrists is 65 per 100,000, or 5.9 times that of the general population. They're killing themselves at a rate that's equivalent to that of their most seriously mentally ill patients that they're treating. Their suicide rate is almost identical. The Journal of Clinical Psychiatry in 1980 did a 5-year study of 18,730 consecutive physician deaths by suicide and found that psychiatrists suicide regularly, year by year, at rates more than twice those expected, and that this difference is statistically significant. They're
Wow.
also being assaulted at a rate, much higher than any other doctor, except for me. Well, dentists have a high suicide rate too. Okay. So psychiatrists have a suicide rate 3 to 5 times higher than most other doctors also. Yeah. And the number of assaults on psychiatrists by their patients are also much higher than regular doctors. So assaults over all jobs based on a study of 120,000 assailants from 1987 to 1992 over 5 years reported that the assault rate for all jobs was 12.6 per 1,000. The assault rate for doctors other than psychiatrists was 16.2 per 1,000. The assault rate for custody staff, these are custody people who are on mental hospital wards all the time. They're there 24 hours a day. Their assault rate is 69 per 1,000. The assault rate for psychiatrists who spend very little time with these patients, when I was working in the state hospital, they were spending 15 minutes a month with these people. And yet their assault rate, I mean, even then I noticed they were being beat up at a rate higher than any other staff. It's a higher than psych nurses, higher than regular nurses, higher than psychologists or counselors. And I'm going, what are they saying to these people that are getting them beat up at a rate higher when they're only seeing them 15 minutes a month? So The American Medical Association reported that psychiatrists' assault rate is 65 per thousand, or 5.9 times higher than the general population.
What
They are
that
being
tells me,
assaulted.
the whole environment, the psychiatric, psychological environment, including the patients that are being deliberately misdiagnosed, there's an archontic overlay to that, right? Because we know that what drives people to suicide, been generally written off as depression, and which is a miasma and a whole umbrella term for a variety of feelings, loneliness, abandonment, isolation, what have you. But the underlying spiritual dynamic to that, with these intrusive voices continually egging on these people to take their life. And if you look at the amount of trauma that the whole surface population has been subjected to, especially in the recent past, the last few years, and then these sub-demographic subpopulations. Today is Memorial Day weekend, so it's a good time to bring this up. You mentioned earlier about the number of veterans that have committed suicide. We're talking about people that have experienced severe trauma. First of all, they underwent the indoctrination of the military institutions, and then they find themselves in a combat environment, and then they get traumatized from that, from seeing all the death, mayhem, and the maiming of friends and what have you. And then the VA system, and I'm talking about in terms of America, the Veterans Administration hospital system, essentially kicks them to the curb and kind of leaves them to their own devices. Many of them wind up homeless on the street. Excuse me. So, that level of despair with these entities making inroads into their consciousness and their psyche because of all the trauma, egging them on, telling them to commit suicide. Again, we have that supernatural, spiritual overlay. And before we got started today, you mentioned that what some of the intrusive voices have been saying to a lot of people these days, there's a one-to-one correlation to what's being spewed out by the media, the academia, what have you. So the voices essentially are reinforcing the messages that this whole archontic society is pushing en masse through mass media. Could you elaborate on that?
Or it's the other way around. The voices. See, now I've been studying schizophrenics for 40 years. I mean, I was very curious about what these voices were that they heard. And when I first got to the graduated, got out of graduate school, went to work at this huge psychiatric hospital, started asking schizophrenic patients. Well, first of all, what I saw was nobody was interested in finding out what these voices were telling these people. You could see that if they're listening to them, if they're listening to these voices, they were getting in more and more trouble. They were assaulting people, they were hurting themselves, they were acting out. I mean, so it appeared to me there was a clear link between the attention that these people were paying to whatever these voices were they were hearing, and their behavior was pretty clear, and it was a negative correlation. So, I would ask staff around me. I'd ask psychiatrists, well, what are these voices? What are they saying? What are they doing? And the answer was they're hallucinations. They didn't pay any attention to them. That's what they were brainwashed to think when they got in there. So if you think you already know something, you're not going to go looking for an answer. So none of them were interested. I'd ask them, what are they? What are they? Well, they're hallucinations. So there was no answer coming from there. They already felt they knew the answer. They're not looking for anything more. They would just ignore the hallucinations. They'd call them audio hallucinations. All right. But it didn't make any sense to me. So I started pulling these people aside that were on my caseload and started asking them, what are these voices telling you? What are you hearing? All right. And patterns started to emerge. Okay. So what the psychiatric mafia is teaching, what they're telling everybody, what they're telling these patients are that these voices are hallucinations. They're not real. Ignore them. and take these medicines. That's the only thing you can do for them. That's the only treatment. So I remember I was with a psychiatrist at the state hospital once when, he was prescribing medicine for one of my patients. And he told them, he said, these are hallucinations. Just ignore them. I called that guy back a week later and I said, remember me? I was with you when your psychiatrist said that these voices were hallucinations, to just ignore them. I asked him, I said, how'd that work for you? He said, it didn't work at all. They got louder. Okay. So I went, that's interesting. They would not be ignored. So I started asking the rest of the schizophrenics on my caseload, what happens when you ignore the voices? The response was consistent. They get louder. They will not be ignored. And then it went to hundreds, and then many hundreds. The response was the same. The voices would not be ignored. They got louder. They got more active if you tried to ignore them. They would torment the person more. Okay. So then patterns started to emerge. First, I got into one of the patients, and I'm sure what happened, his voices got upset that I was asking questions about them. They didn't want him answering those questions. He got upset. He went to one of the psychiatrists in the psychiatric rehab center I was working and told the psychiatrist that I was asking questions about his voices and I was upsetting him. Now, because the psychiatrists were being assaulted at a very high rate in that hospital, they didn't want anybody upsetting psychiatric patients any more than they absolutely had to. So I ended up in front of the psychiatrist on the red carpet one morning with him staring at me and saying one of his patients came and talked to him and said that I was asking him questions about the voices he was hearing. He said, I'm ordering you to stop that right now. Said the voices are hallucinations. If you ask them questions about it, you're reinforcing those hallucinations and you're making the patient worse. That happened twice while I was at the state hospital. Both times ordered not to even investigate what the voices were saying. By then it was too late. I knew what he was telling me was a crock of crap. I'd already talked to enough schizophrenic patients where I saw it wasn't making them any worse. And I was starting to see some patterns. And one of the first patterns were that these voices that they were hearing were consistently negative. If they were hallucinations, you would expect them to be random, positive, negative, everything in between. They would be random. Hallucinations don't run patterns. They're all over the place. The voices ran fixed, consistent patterns. They were consistently negative. They were consistently abusive, insulting, destructive, derogatory. They would tell these patients, you're no good, you're rotten, you're stupid, you're ugly, nobody likes you, you're not going to amount to anything. People are just pretending that they like you. There's people following you. There's people going to hurt you. I mean, they would tell them n totally consistently negative stuff. All right. It did not convene from that. I mean, it was just what, and my question was, okay, what is holding them on that pattern? Why aren't they negative like all other hallucinations? What is holding them on such a negative trajectory? That was my first question. Why? Okay. Second thing I found is I had patients come and talk to me saying, well, I tried to read the Bible to kind of, I know these things are not good, and I'm trying to read the Bible, but they get louder when I read the Bible. And I went, well, that's odd. So when I got that report, I started asking other schizophrenic patients, what happens when you go to church? What happens when you read the Bible? What happens when you pray? What effect does that have on these negative voices, on these voices you're hearing? Okay. I actually did a study on it, a 1 to 10. Well, it broke into three groups. If the voices that the patient was hearing were weak and they went into a church, the voices shut up. They just shut up. If they were of moderate strength, they got louder. They would interfere with listening to the preacher. They would interfere with listening to whatever was going on in there or attending anything. They got louder. They would start mocking the preacher, saying that the Bible was a bunch of crap and finding every fault they could possibly find with what was being said. If they were very strong, they would drive the person out of the church. He would just get up and run out of the church. Okay? So I started asking patients, what happens when you pray? What happens when you start read the Bible? They get louder. They get more and more irritated. And then one day I had one patient come and say, I repeated the 23rd Psalm, and the voices reacted like worms thrown onto a hot frying pan. They could not stand it. He said they were tormented by the 23rd Psalm. So I started asking other patients, have they ever read the 23rd Psalm? And if they didn't, I would give it to them, say, read this when the voices come and come back and tell me what effect it had on them. The voices got irritated when they read the 23rd Psalm. They couldn't stand it. It was like they would curse and they would scream and they would holler. They couldn't deal with it, And it was specifically the 23rd Psalm they couldn't stand. So I started handing that out to patients. Scores of patients, the results were the same. It was consistent. It was a consistent pattern. The voices were anti-religious. They didn't want them going to church. They didn't want them praying. They didn't want them asking for help. They didn't want them reading the Bible. They didn't want them reading any kind of positive spiritual material. What kind of hallucination would care whether the person was religious or not? Why would a hallucination care? Pattern number two, pattern number three, they fostered and would create negative emotion. Everything they did was designed to create a negative emotional state in that individual, to create paranoia, fear, anxiety, every possible negative emotion that they could generate. And then what was strange is I noticed that all of a sudden, the voices would show up. They'd start mocking them and being derisive and nasty and creating all kinds of turmoil and filling their head with lies. And then once the voices left, they were drained. So there was a one-to-one correspondence between these voices showing up and abusing these people and their energy levels dropping to nothing. When I went to work for the prison, I was actually able to do some experiments with these people, unlike at the psychiatric hospital where I had to be very careful. So I always had a group of schizophrenics around me in the prison when I was working for the psychology department, who agreed to tell me in real time when we were working together what the voices were telling them. And for years and years, I had a group like that around me. So I was able to tune in to what these voices were saying. And I would give them, I'd give the patients stuff to kind of break up these patterns. So there's like 23 of these patterns that these voices were running. Okay. And one of which was they foster and create negative emotion. Now, you can see these yourself. I mean, it's not like what the psychiatric mafia has done. Oh, they're genetic. It's a genetic or abnormality, or it's a biochemical imbalance that you can't see that. You can't prove it. You can go to my website at jerrymarzinski.com, go to articles, pull up these patterns, and you will see 23 patterns that these voices consistently run. That's their behavioral identity. That's their operational definition. That's what they are. Okay? Right in front of you. It's not a biochemical imbalance. Anybody who's working around schizophrenics or neurotics or any mentally ill person can see that these factors are in effect. Okay? So they energetically drain their victims. All of the schizophrenics would tell me after the voices leave, I'm energetically drained. There's some of them who said that I could actually feel my energy leaving my body while these voices were attacking. Okay. So they are taking that energy, but they don't want the patient to realize it. So that's one of the things that they went crazy over. Okay. So when I was doing psych crisis in the hospital emergency rooms, they didn't want you working with patients in the emergency room. They wanted you getting them out. So I was thinking, what is the most helpful thing that I could tell these patients who I thought could take it that would help them, in the short period of time I had to work with them? And it turned out to be that these voices are parasites. They're actually draining your life energy. You can feel it for yourself. Okay? But I had to be very careful with who I told that to, because they would explode. I mean, if they were going to go off, they would go off at that. So the ones I felt I could trust them weren't going to go run to the psychiatrist and say, "Hey, this guy's telling me a bunch of crap." I would tell them, "Are you hearing the voices right now?" He said, "No." I said, "When's the last time you heard them?" He said, "Well, I heard them several hours ago." And I'd tell them, "Well, you're going to hear them in about 4 minutes, and they're going to be very strong. If you can't deal with them, I'm not going to block you from leaving this office. You can leave, go back, calm down, come back when you're ready. I'm not going to call the police on you. I'm not going to call the guards on you. I'm not going to tell him. You just go calm down and come back when you can." All right. And then I would tell him, in about 4 minutes, the voices are going to go nuts. And then I'd say, "Do you notice that every time the voices show up when they leave, you're drained. You don't have any energy." They go, "Well, come to think of it, yeah." They hadn't thought of that before. It was just like they were feeling so miserable they didn't notice that. And I said, "How long you been hearing these voices for?" And they would say, "Well, years." And I said, "So basically, what you're telling me is that you've heard these voices tens of thousands of times attacking you, and every time they attacked you, your energy was depleted and drained. So there's a one-to-one correspondence between them coming and your energy disappearing." And I would ask him, "Well, where do you think your energy went? You didn't use it. You were sleeping. You were tossing in bed or laying around or sitting in a chair. You didn't use it." And I had some inmates tell me that they felt so drained that they felt like they were working out in the hot sun all day with a hammer and pickaxe. That's how little energy they had after an attack. So I'd tell them, I said, "Well, this has happened to you tens of thousands of times. Every time it happened, your energy levels dropped to nothing. You didn't use that energy. You were laying in bed. Where do you think it went?" Their response was, in 90% of the time, was, "I don't know." They were being blocked from seeing it. And it said, "Well, if you stuck your hand in a fire 1,000 times, and every time you stuck your hand in the fire, it got burned, what would be burning you?" They had no trouble saying the fire. But if I went back again and said, "Okay, you heard these voices thousands of times. Every time they came, you were energetically drained. When they left, you had no energy. Where do you think your energy went?" Again, it was, "I don't know." They were being blocked. And the ones that did, the light came on in their head, I would say about 10%, without working further with them, would say they took it. See, once they realized they were parasites, that made a huge difference. If you had a large leech on you, you wouldn't just sit there and look at it and went, "Oh, well, that's okay. I'm feeling bad. It's okay to leave that leech there." No, you'd know that thing was draining you and you'd want to get rid of it. Once they were aware that they were being drained by this thing, they started getting a glimmer that these voices were not friends. They were an enemy. They were draining their life energy. They were taking something from them that was against their will, right? So the first thing they need to realize is that these voices are not who they are. Now, because these voices appear in their minds, and that appears to be in your head, everybody thinks that every thought that materializes in your head belongs to you, comes from you. That's far from the truth. Your brain is like a radio receiver. It picks up the frequency it's tuned to. And if you're tuned to a psychotic frequency, that's going to be a very negative frequency. You're going to get negative messages all the time. But they have to understand that those thoughts coming into their heads are not who they are. And the voices want them to believe it. Now, I don't know how many patients that were as curious about the voices as I was that told me they asked the voices, "Who are you? What are you? What do you think the voices said?" Take a guess.
Probably something along the lines that there's some kind of superior kind of intelligence.
No, what they said is, "We are you. We are you." They want the patient to believe that that voice in their head is who they are. And if the patient believes that, they're done for. They start acting like these voices tell them to act. They start believing like these voices want them to believe. That generates more negative emotional energy, and it drives the person further and further away from reality. They become more and more like the voices. I've had meth addicts who were hearing voices that ran out of meth. The voices would tell them where to go and when to be there to get more meth, and magically, some stranger would show up with more meth. I've had them tell robbers which houses to rob, how to get in, when the people who are awake in there, when to get out, and where to hide. Over and over again, I've had patients in the prison tell me when they got into a fight, it wasn't them who was fighting. It was the voices who had taken them over who were doing the fighting. And they seldom lost the fight. They became supernaturally strong when the voices were active. Prison guards who start messing with a psychotic patient don't mess with m many more. I've watched a 150-pound psychotic prisoner throw two big guards around the inside of the cell like they were popcorn. They're supernaturally strong. They foster self-destructive behavior. Okay. They get louder when they're ignored. Okay. These are all patterns that they're running. Okay. Just like the psychiatric mafia. You don't listen to them, they start broadcasting more and more and more. They pay off more and more radio stations to broadcast their garbage. They get louder after sunset. They get loudest between 3 and 4 in the morning. They consistently foster self-destructive behavior. They're telling patients to do things that are not in their best interest. They're telling them to kill themselves. They foster isolation, just like what happened during the pandemic. Stay away from everybody. Don't visit your relatives. Don't go to stores. 6 feet distance. Don't talk to anybody. Isolation.
Well, we
That's
also
exactly what
saw
the voices want.
exactly, and we saw the outcome of that with in the rise of these mass cults, these Karens, across the
And the
board,
suicide rate, the
and the suicide
suicide rate.
rate. Oh, yeah, there are countless people committed suicide during the lockdowns because these voices are just egging them on, basically, just saying there's no hope. It's
Right. They
insidious.
hate the human race. Virtually every negative thought that comes into your mind about yourself comes from them. That's not your thought. See, the biggest mistake people are making is thinking that every thought that materializes in their head belongs to them. That's far from the truth. Emanuel Swedenborg, a Christian mystic, lived 300 years ago. He said, "None of the thoughts that come into your head originate from you. They either come in from heaven or they come in from hell." He says, "You've got two demons on one shoulder. You've got two guardian angels on the other shoulder. The demons can go in and they can put these thoughts in your head. They can upset you. They can wreak havoc. And they can do that. The positive ones speak more in feelings and intuition and serendipity. They don't barge in. They have to have your permission for them to help you. the negative ones can just barge in, put whatever they want in your head. And it's not that they just hit the schizophrenics alone. They hit us all. You know, they hit every single one of us. You know, you could be driving down the highway and I've heard people say, well, you know, I thought about turning into oncoming traffic. You know, where did that thought come from? You know, I had one of the best preachers I ever knew. He's standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon and had a thought to jump. Where did that thought come from? I don't know how many people I talked to were standing on the bridge looking down, going, oh, well, jump. You know, they hit us all.
And
And all of those thoughts are upsetting.
it's reinforced. That was the template, the underlying structure, if you will, and then it's reinforced by negative programming with this archontic mass media bullfrog's chorus, this echo chamber that we hear.
Yep.
And if you look at society now, all the violent, aberrant behavior, all the mayhem, all the looting of the stores, the attacks meted out against innocent people, even children, is being attacked for no reason. And also, you combine that with this mass influx of people that I regard as coming from countries where this sort of archontic manipulation and control is the norm. So you have all these people with all these ideologies and creeds that probably came from some nether dimensional source. And then they come into our society and by force, attempt to impose their will, but which is really the will of the jinn and the archontic forces working through them. Oh, look, that white woman is exposing part of her forearm that gives us permission to gang rape and mutilate her, right? Because that is the tape that's running in their heads constantly. So when you, it's like cramming a square peg into a round hole, when you bring this mass influx of people with that kind of mentality, it's going to be a volatile situation and the innocent people are going to suffer. And then also the decay, the rot of the inner cities in America and in the West, where we saw an extreme example of that with the so-called Chud Zone or whatever it was in Seattle, where these freaks just basically took over like a number of city blocks,
Yeah.
declared it as their own, like homeland, and just went on this rampage door to door, attacking people. That's got to be entity driven. It's not just politically driven. There has to be this cadre, this existing cadre of entity infested people that are being goaded, that would normally be doing these things anyway if they were off the leash, off the reservation. But their attributes, if you will, their potential for mayhem and violence was corralled essentially and redirected at the rest of society. So what you're describing is we're seeing this across the board now. People on board of airplanes raising a ruckus, people in restaurants raising a ruckus, people in classrooms, teachers being attacked, right? It's
Yeah,
increasingly younger people.
and they're beating down the police, you know, taking away their authority. Hundreds of police have left the New York Police Department, New York City Police Department, because they just couldn't function. They've taken away their authority. There's freaks pouring water on their heads or soda on their heads. You know, there's no respect for authority. And you look at what's happening. I mean, meth is one of the biggest causes of psychosis that I've seen. While I was working in the prison, hundreds of meth addicts came in there completely psychotic. You know, they start using meth, they start hearing these same voices that the schizophrenics do. They go, oh, well, that's just a hallucination. When I come down, it'll go away. And it does. And it may go away for 10 times or 20 times or 100 times, and then one day it doesn't. It stays. It's permanent. And they're just as psychotic as any of the schizophrenics on the psych wards. And they stay that way. And look what's happening. Meth is pouring across the U.S. border now by the ton. the mafia is making a fortune on it. And here's these freaks up in higher government allowing that to come across the border. You know, it's a Sinaloa mafia has paid off the entire Arizona state government, all the attorney generals, you know, all the courts, they're all paid off by Soros and the Sinaloa cartel. They stole the election, they inserted this fako governor, and now they're getting caught, and the courts won't listen to the evidence. You know, totally stolen, just like our election was. And there's
Yeah,
more and more evidence coming out to that now.
absolutely. And we'll run out the first segment with this statement from me. But if you look at how, especially in these blue cities and these blue states, these good for nothing, bought and paid for prosecutors and district attorneys working for essentially George Soros. And people don't understand. I've had Pierre Sabbach on the show and talking about the etymological roots, the philology behind words and the origins of words, the roots of words in various languages. Like Soros is a play, a word play on Sauros, which is in Greek means lizard. Okay. So you have George Soros funding all these attorneys and these district attorneys and these prosecutors and these judges. So we have these repeat violent offenders with their voices in their heads telling them to commit all this mayhem. They're let out of their own recognizance within hours to wreak more mayhem because what they want is this demolition man escape from New York type society where these psychopathies are normalized and it's the innocent who are twice victimized, first by these entity infested violent repeat offenders that keep getting let out. Look what they did in California. Oh, because we care so much about these violent prisoners, sex offenders, and what have you, that are locked up in our prisons because of the close proximity to one another, it'll spread contagion, what have you. Let's just turn them loose on society. We'll lock everyone else down, right? Make them, locked up in their own homes and shut down their businesses, but we'll open the prisons and turn them, all these violent offenders loose. Where else but in our contact-controlled planet would something like that happen? Anyway, we reached the end of the fascinating first segment with our guest, Jerry Marzinski. Jerry, can you tell our listeners how they could find your work?
Well, you can go to jerrymarzinski.com. That's Marzinsky. Or write me at JMARZ, the number one, at outlook.com.
Well, for those of you watching and listening, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.